we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is Friday, October the 7th, 2016, CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada. I am your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio today with our operator, Allison Cole.
Hello.
And my co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
Today we'll be discussing the pig trial. Anita Crines, an animal rights activist from Ontario, has been charged with mischief for giving water to severely dehydrated pigs on their way to slaughter last June. On Monday, she took the stand in court to defend herself. By Wednesday, she had been arrested for again taking photos of injured and dying pigs after a truck taking them to slaughter overturned near the slaughterhouse. Of the 180 pigs, 40 died, many killed in front of the activists in the street as they begged for authorities to release them to a sanctuary. We will also discuss the common arguments against veganism and how best to respond to them. Let's begin with this segment. As animal rights activists, we are constantly trying to educate the public about how easy it is to go vegan. But we have a rather large task of dispelling myths, some of which we believed ourselves at one time. Sinead, why don't you start by beginning us by telling us some of the common arguments against veganism?
Well, among them, I suppose there's the personal choice argument.
It's my personal choice.
We've done this for centuries argument. The list goes on.
How do you respond to those?
Well, yeah, the one that I encounter the most often, the most frequently, I think, these days, is it's a personal choice. And that ties in with, we've been doing it for centuries, and it's a personal choice, and it's a circle of life, and et cetera, et cetera. And I was just thinking, how can anybody think that it's a personal choice if your personal choice has a victim, you know, if you're literally eating somebody else's body who used to be alive and no longer is just because you feel like eating it when you do have other options, then it cannot be said to be personal. And it's weird because you don't always think about that. You know, as you said, you know, we used to believe this stuff ourselves, but then you stop and you think about it and you go, oh, yeah, actually, you know, this causes suffering and it's not necessary. And there's a ton else to eat. So
it's never a personal choice to take away the life of someone. Like, that's all it really boils down to, in my opinion.
Yeah, take someone's life. It's not a personal choice. Even if you needed to, you know, you get people saying, oh, well, what if you were out in the bush and you were going to die, which is a situation that does not happen on a regular basis and is just not an excuse for going to the supermarket and buying beef instead of beans. You know, like, right. Yeah, if someone suffered and died and they didn't need to, then that can't be called a personal choice.
Even if there was a situation where I would justify somebody taking a life of someone else because they live somewhere and that was all they could eat, I still would have to say, sure, I'll justify that, but you cannot call it a personal choice. Someone else was involved in that, and mm-hmm. they didn't get a choice. I'm not making it wrong in that scenario, but it's just an improper title.
Yes, agreed.
And Allison, what common arguments against veganism do you encounter, and how do you respond?
Well, there's always the one, of course, where do you get your protein? Mm-hmm. Now, how many times have we been asked that?
I would be rich if I had a dollar every time I heard that.
So would I. So, yeah, I'm so surprised, like, in this day and age with all this information out there showing that, you know, protein is so easy to get. If you're getting enough calories in your diet, you're getting enough protein. And people still ask that question, where do you get your protein? And have either of you ever heard of the disease called kwashiorkor?
No.
It's the disease of protein deficiency. The reason you have never heard of it is because it virtually is non-existent here in North America, right? We're a first world country here. We get enough calories. So, I mean, we need 5 to 10% of our daily calories to be from protein. It's not that difficult. And what about elephants and the great apes? Do they eat animals?
Nope.
And do they look like they have enough protein?
That's a great example.
Yeah, and those are my main points there. Yeah, we could go on about this more, but I would say with those points, case closed. Where do you get your protein? When I get asked that, I say from plants, because there's enough protein in all the plants that we eat, and to get your 5 to 10% every day, you don't need that much. I actually do track my nutrients sometimes, and it does not take long for me to get my needed protein in one day.
I get all of mine in my morning smoothie. I just have some hemp protein powder, and then I'm definitely getting more than that in my day because it's in everything.
I rarely do protein powder anymore because I just find I don't need it.
That's true. You don't need to. I shouldn't perpetuate the myth that you need that. I'm just saying it's an easy way. And it's really a healthy food, so why not? And is there another common argument against veganism that you encounter, Allison?
I'm sure there's many. Would you like to suggest one for me?
How about the canine teeth argument? Should we talk about this one?
So people think that, the argument is because we have canine teeth that were meant to rip away meat. Is that the argument?
Exactly.
Well, we don't have fangs. That's the thing, is we don't have the incisors that that carnivores like tigers and lions have. So I'm not sure where that argument's going. Our teeth are rounded and blunt. They're for chewing plants. What do you have any?
That makes me think of our intestine length.
Yeah. Same thing. We don't have the type of intestine that is meant to digest meat. And that's why we get all these diseases, because we have these really long intestines with lots of grooves in them and the meat gets stuck in them, right? And that's why meat does not digest very well. If you think of a carnivore, like a lion or a tiger, they actually need to eat meat every day because it goes through them right away. With us, it's not the case. You've never seen a tiger or a lion with cancer, right? But on the other hand, humans get all these lifestyle, diet-related diseases, and that's one of the main sources of it, is from all the meat that's going into our intestines.
And this is now common knowledge. Anybody that's pretending not to know this has got their head
in the sand.
I don't
know. It does make sense. There's a lot of good information on the internet about it, and I would suggest looking at Dr. Milton Mills on YouTube. He's done many good talks on this subject. I saw him do a talk about this years ago, and he told me he was going to be writing a book about it, about why we physiologically are not meant to eat meat.
I haven't heard of him. I'll look that up. Thank you.
Milton Mills. I want to have him on the show one day when he writes his book.
Well, how about plants have feelings?
Someone gave me that one last week, actually. And come on, like, do people really think they have feelings?
I know.
Yeah.
It's definitely a comment that you get more from the hecklers in the Bacon Fest lineups.
And the fact is that we don't have plants do not have a central nervous system. And that's what you need to have feelings, right?
Yeah. So, sometimes you can say to people, do you cry when people cut the grass then?
Well, yeah. And as you know, as the saying goes, you know, there's a reason why you take your kids to the pumpkin patch, but you don't take them to the slaughterhouse, you know.
Good
like
one.
It.
And what I told my friend last week who gave me this one, I mean, he was just kind of kidding, but I said, you know, if you really do care about plants, you'll eat plants because we have to eat something, and way more plants get killed in order to feed all the animals that we then eat. It's an inefficient system. 80% of all sowing corn in the world is grown to feed the animals that then feed the humans.
Yeah, exactly.
So eat plants if you care about plants.
Well, that brings me to my next common argument, which is there are wars going on and people are starving in the world. So then I talk to people about how much land is used to grow plants to feed to animals that we then eat. And what could we be doing with those plants if we weren't feeding it to animals? We could be feeding it to starving nations.
Mm-hmm. And that ties in with the personal choice thing too. People say, oh, it's a personal choice. But to me, these days, I'd find myself thinking about the world hunger issues and environmental issues in addition to the ethical concerns with eating animals. And it's like, all right, personal choice, like driving a Hummer over a whole bunch of babies or something. You know, it's like the least efficient and most environmentally damaging route, and you're killing innocent individuals who didn't need to die in the process of it. So
I always say, just like my my car bumper says, is animal rights is human rights and human rights is animal rights. It's all interconnected. And I would just like to point out to our listeners that we have actually done a really couple of good shows and interviews on this subject for International Human Rights Day on December 10th. So if you want to check out those interviews, go to animalvoices.org to find out a lot more.
That's great. Another question that I get asked by people, I wouldn't say this is an argument, but they wonder where we get essential nutrients like iron and B12. We've gone over the protein one. So personally, I get my B12 from drops that I keep in my fridge. It costs me $30 for a month's supply of them, and I'm good to go.
So why can't you get your B12 from a vegan diet, just from the food you eat, Jen?
I'll let you answer that one, Allison.
Okay. So, yeah, this is a common one. B12 is really the only vitamin that we need to supplement. And the reason is because back in millennials ago, you know, B12, it comes from bacteria in soil, right? Which animals consume. And that's where people get it from when they're eating animals. However, when we're eating the fruits and vegetables that we eat these days that are so sanitized and washed so well in just like this, you know, modern world that we live in, we don't get those nutrients from soil anymore, so we do need to supplement. And another natural way to get it is from algae from the ocean, because that B12 is in that. And then meat eaters get it from basically the dirt that's in animals. So I would rather take a little sublingual B12 tab every now and then. I've had my B12 levels checked, actually, and surprisingly, my levels were like way more than enough. And I don't take supplements. Our cereals are fortified with it, and nutritional yeast is actually a good place to get it too, and it's really yummy as well.
And actually, a B12 supplement can often be injected into livestock to keep their levels up due to topsoil being too intensively used and lacking in certain nutrients. So the choice becomes even more absurd. Either take B12 supplement or give an animal a B12 supplement and then eat them.
Yeah, no, it's pretty inefficient. It's pretty inefficient for sure.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food, sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food, hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
All right, and now for some events. There are a few things coming up this weekend. Tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. at the Hallmark Slaughterhouse at Commercial and Hastings, Liberation BC will be putting on another Slaughterhouse Vigil, which they've been doing regularly. And activists go out, hold signs. Signs are provided, so just come down, hold signs, and raise awareness of what goes on behind those slaughterhouse walls. Try to get this on people's minds, get them thinking about it, and Liberation BC does this regularly, so go to their website or their Facebook page, Liberation BC, to find out more information. And again, tomorrow, that's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Commercial and Hastings. On October 9th, on Sunday, there is another Earthlings experience and leafleting event and chalking event at Vancouver City Centre Station downtown at Georgia and Granville. This will be from 2 to 5 p.m. and again, activists getting together to just raise awareness of what's going on in slaughterhouses and what's going on with animals. Bring a tablet or a laptop if you can, and screen Earthlings to the public just downtown on the street. And if you don't have a device to screen it, you can just come on down and put out some leaflets or just stand in solidarity. And also there's chalking, so just writing messages for people, get people thinking. So again, that's 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, October 9th at Vancouver City Centre Station. on Monday, it is Thanksgiving Monday, which is always an interesting time for people who choose not to eat animals. every year there has been the annual Compassionate Thanksgiving potluck at the SDA Hall at 5350 Bailey Street. And in previous years, it has been organized by our very own Allison Cole. And this year...
I'm too busy this year doing animal voices.
Yes.
That is the truth.
Yes.
We're still having one this year.
Allison's too busy being a superhero on all these other levels this year. But fellow vegans have carried the torch. And so from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Monday, October 10th, you can go to the SDA Hall and enjoy a potluck. Bring cutlery and plates and bring a vegan dish, and it's been great. It's been great in all the previous years. So last year, I think there were about 200 people who came.
Yes, because Sinead has always played at it. She's yes. been her entertainment. But Vancouver Meatless Meetup is sponsoring it this year. They're completely organizing it, so it should be something nice for community to check out if you need somewhere to go to on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, absolutely. And the donation, it's by donation. Nobody is turned away, but it's by donation, suggested donation of $5. And the proceeds go to the cost of meatless meetups, as well as the Vancouver Humane Society's Chicken Out campaign, which is working to eliminate battery cages for hens and looking out for chicken welfare. So, yep, if you're looking for a place to go this Thanksgiving, that's going to be a good spot to be. Absolutely. If you have any animal-friendly events that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
All right, so now we've got some news. All right, so a lot of us have heard about the pit bull ban that was put in place in Montreal that went through last week. This week, the ban was actually suspended following an appeal by the Montreal SPCA. And there are a lot of arguments flying around that, but under the bylaw, adopting new pit bull type dogs, which is a blurry line, is illegal, and current owners face strict regulations. A special permit would be required for owners, and listed dogs are required to be muzzled, sterilized, and fitted with a microchip. But following this suspension, that means that pit bull type dogs can still be adopted, and muzzling is not mandatory, which is great. And so this suspension is going to be in place for as long as it takes for the SPCA's case to be heard on all of its merits. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing for pit bulls, and they're hoping to push this through so that we can stop blaming dogs and start putting the responsibility in the hands of people who are putting the dogs in these less than fortunate situations. Also this week, there was there's been a lot this week. There was a bill. There was the Modernizing Protection Act, was Bill C-246. That was put forward to the House of Commons, and it failed this week. This was an act to modernize the protection of animals in Canada. And
it's really quite terrible. We did an interview with Nathaniel Erskine-Smith about this. He was the MP that had put this bill through. It's a private member's bill. And I was really shocked to hear about that.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's the fourth attempt since 1999, apparently, to modernize our animal cruelty laws, which, as it turns out, are about a century old. And even after all these attempts to update it, then the Liberal government is still just digging their heels in and siding with industry, as far as I've been able to tell. It was a Liberal backbencher who put this forward, Nathaniel Erskine-Smith, And his bill was looking to close loopholes in several pieces of legislation, including the Criminal Code and the Fisheries Act, proposed a ban on importing cat and dog fur and shark fins, tougher rules on puppy mills, make it a crime to profit from or breed animals for the purpose of fighting, and make the brutal and vicious killing of an animal a new offense, changed from the standard animal cruelty with willful neglect to gross negligence. So lots of changes that would really help animals, but it did not go through. The government argued that it could have inadvertently rendered lawful activities such as hunting, trapping, fishing, ranching, and medical research illegal. Justice Minister Jody Wilson-Raybould says the government supports the premise of Erskine Smith's bill, but more consultations are needed. And as I say, Canada is known for having some of the worst animal cruelty legislation in the Western world. So for a country that calls itself compassionate and progressive so much of the time, this is really sad. So definitely contact your MPs if you can and let them know that you support Bill C-246, that you want to see change for animals, and express your disappointment that it did not go through. But it's a good conversation starter. Things have started going, and yeah.
So well, I'll do that for sure. Thanks, Sinead.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Sinead. So next up, we're going to be having our two feature interviews. The first one is with Mary Chris Staples. She is an activist now residing in Toronto, one of the members of Toronto Pig Save. And she was a witness to the truck filled with pigs on its way to slaughter that was overturned just a couple days ago. So here's that interview with her.
Thank you for making time to be on the show today, Mary Chris.
Oh, thank you, Jen, for inviting me. And thank you so much for covering this story for your listeners. It's so important that we realize there are people all over the world who care about it. So it's great to know that it's being shared far and wide.
And you're a friend of Anita Crines and a fellow member of Toronto Pig Save. How long have you been working with Anita for animal rights causes?
Well, it's interesting. I met Anita quite a few years ago when I was still living in Vancouver, and it was her inspiration that got me to start the chicken vigils at the Hallmark Slaughterhouse in Vancouver. So that's how that all got going. And then once I moved to Toronto, I just carried on working with her. And what I've done with Toronto Pig Save is tried to extend the vigils that they were holding at slaughterhouses, doing outreach on the streets for the public. So that's what we've been doing, and our group is now called the Save Outreach Team, connected with Toronto Pig Save.
And this has been a very eventful week for all of you with Toronto Pig Save. On Monday, for the third day in court for the now famous pig trial, Anita had her turn to take the stand. You were outside with other activists in support of Anita. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So while the courtroom was packed with supporters for Anita, a group of us stayed outside with big signs to let the public know what was going on in the courthouse. What we found is that many, many people have heard about the trial. And so the more attention that we bring to it and the more we get people going to the hashtag pig trial information, the more they're not only going to learn about the ridiculous charges against Anita, but more importantly, about the issues that make us all want to fight for the rights of animals. As you know, this trial has turned into something that is no longer about giving water to pigs. It's now about the fact that pigs and other animals should not be in this situation in the first place. So that was my goal, was to make sure that the public were going to the hashtag pig trial information and learning as much as they could about the injustice against pigs. And it was great that the public was very responsive, lots of waves, lots of horn honking. We gave out tons of leaflets to people. And it's amazing. What's beautiful is that as soon as you mention that this is about a woman going to jail for giving water to pigs, hardly anyone doesn't think that that is just ridiculous. And so what that serves is a perfect lead-in to give them more information about why we believe pigs should not be bred and killed for human consumption in the first place. So that's the beauty of it. The draw is there. People want to know more about this trial, and they're now learning more about what we want them to learn about, which is this horrible injustice that is the animal agriculture industry.
Yeah, I've actually found the same thing, Mary Chris. The people that would often be heckling animal rights activists for standing up for animals are actually on side with Anita and saying, I can't believe someone's being charged for that. And that is a great lead-in for them to look at the other issues.
It's perfect, because what we want is to have a connection with the public. If they can connect with us in any small way, they might be open to learning more.
And I do, yeah, and I love that really the meat industry is on trial now. It's not so much about Anita. I can't believe the judge is allowing her to talk about things that one might consider irrelevant to the case.
It is absolutely fantastic. And the real heroes in this story are those two lawyers who are representing Anita. One of my good friends, Louise Jorgensen, she posted a picture of them one day, and she said, I'm sure these two have been sent straight from heaven. They are amazing, amazing activists themselves, and they're working closely with Anita. And Anita is putting in hours of preparation, not to get herself free from these charges, that's the last thing on her mind, but to make sure that she represents pigs the absolute best way she can. There is no better person that could be in this position than Anita. She's just amazing.
She does handle herself very well, despite the fact that this has got to be very scary for her.
Yeah, and as she would say, the biggest fear for her is that it doesn't help the pigs. She is that the last thing she is worried about is herself. She's just an amazing person. And so with her and that legal team, we are so hopeful that this is going to be, a big point in the history of animal liberation.
Well, I do know that the world is paying attention to this, and I try to bring it up with as many people as I can just to get them thinking about how our animals are raised. And on Wednesday, Anita was taken into custody by police for her actions at the scene of an overturned truck, which was on its way to the slaughterhouse. Did you witness the crash or Anita's arrest?
Oh, I was right beside her when it happened. I was holding up a wild love one, but eat the other sign with the hashtag pig trial on it. Again, just trying to get the public to know more about what was happening. And when Anita arrived, like many of us, she wanted to get closer to bear witness to what was happening. The screams were terrible, Jen. The screams will haunt us, I think, for the rest of our lives. And what was so frustrating is that the workers were holding up these cardboard placards so that we couldn't see what was happening on the other side. So we could only imagine by hearing the screams that there were animals lying on the ground and there was blood. And so we were all trying to get closer in order to bear witness, to document with photos, to show the world what they were trying to hide. And when Anita arrived, of course, that was her first thing is to expose this. And so she crossed the police tape, like many of us did, and the police sent her back. And of course, she went back. It's hard to ignore the screams to get some more photos. And at that point, they dragged her away and arrested her. And it was no coincidence that they dragged her away. They dragged me away at one point too, but they didn't arrest me. So it was quite clear they were trying to send a message to Anita. They knew who she was, and this was to take her away. So yeah, just terrible, terrible. All she did was cross the police tape.
Mm-hmm. That's actually what I was wondering, is if she was specifically targeted to harm her in her trial.
That's all I can think of, because like I said, there were dozens of us there, and all of us trying to do the same thing and calling for justice. And so that's my opinion. And I think it's, out of 60 plus people, she's the one they took away. It doesn't seem like a coincidence to me.
Right. And on that evening, you all held an evening vigil for the tragic truck accident and the pig death. Did you attend that?
Yes, I did. Yes. And it was, it served a lot of purposes. I think many of us were traumatized that day by, again, largely just from the screams. We weren't allowed to see a lot, except that we all were there when a poor sweet pig was shot with a bolt gun as we begged for her release. I don't know if you heard about that Steve Jenkins from Happily Ever Esther was there with a truck ready to rescue any pigs. We begged, people were screaming. There were definitely a few that were downed and were not going to be able to be processed, as they say in the industry. And we begged to take them to the sanctuary and to get veterinary care. There were no veterinarians on site, and they refused. And so they put up their cardboard placards, and right behind it, they put the bolt gun to the head of this sweet pig. So people were traumatized, and I think that was the vigil that night was almost more for that. We needed to be together. The whole intersection was lined with candles. You couldn't miss it. There was still a lot of traffic coming by till quite late at night, and over 100 of us were there to honor the victims of the crime and to support each other on this terrible day.
Wow, that just brings tears to my eyes hearing that story.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah. How do you think this trial will turn out, Mary Chris?
Well, it's hard to say. In terms of what will happen to Anita, I'm not sure whether she will still be found guilty. I mean, technically, it sounds like she has committed a crime according to our legal system. But I think the issue will not be how it turns out for Anita, whether she is found not guilty or guilty. What is going to be most important is that this trial has brought to the headlines the treatment of pigs, and that's the hope for all of us. So I think no matter what happens to Anita, we hope the best for her, obviously. Our biggest hope is that this raises awareness all over the world and people are galvanized to stand up and join the movement and keep fighting for all animals. That's all of our hope for this trial, and we can't thank Anita and her lawyers enough for turning it into this. I'm sure the people from Fearman's and from the pig farm are mortified at the way that the tables have turned in this trial. This is not at all what they expected. They were hoping to stop activists from protesting. That was clearly their goal, and clearly that hasn't happened, because we, as you know, people from all over the world are standing up for this. So we see the beautiful posts from Vancouver, Megan Beatty, organizing groups to show their support, and that's coming from all over the world. And so that's the outcome of the trial. And I think in that sense, animal rights is going to win no matter what happens to Anita.
You know, this reminds me of how when the Vancouver Aquarium sued Gary Charbonneau for copyright infringement, again, it didn't turn out the way they wanted. And really what it did was get a lot of publicity for his documentary and exposed a lot of the lies that they tell the public. And that was quite a backfire for them as well. It's a very similar situation that I'm grateful for.
Exactly. Exactly. We have to play the game using the legal system, but I believe people in the world are good. Most people are good, and they just don't know the truth. So if this kind of thing brings out that compassion in people, then it is absolutely worth every cent. And I remember at the beginning thinking, you know, oh, this trial, what a waste of taxpayers' money to try and charge someone for giving water to pigs. And now I feel completely different. I feel like it's about time taxpayers' money is going to expose animal cruelty.
Right,
it's
on.
Just... I'm more than happy for my tax dollars to go to this.
Yeah.
You know, even on the day of the overturned truck, several people ended up joining us who were just walking through the neighborhood and saw the commotion and the police cars and the truck overturned and started asking questions. And they didn't even know that slaughterhouse existed. And as soon as they knew, they were moved to act with compassion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, any news is good news, I think, in the case of raising awareness and exposing the nightmare that is the animal agriculture industry.
Right. And, you know, speaking of people that were passing by, I watched one of the video clips of a gentleman who I think was just driving by the scene and happened to get out of his vehicle. And he was pointing his finger angrily at the police officer who was laughing. And he said, "You're on duty right now. Watch your demeanor. This is an accident."
Absolutely.
Did you see that? Were you there for that?
Yeah. It was amazing. I was just so proud of him to have the courage to stand up and speak. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I want his name. I want to interview him. What a wonderful person. I was in tears watching that passion come out of him. And, you know, yelling at the cops at a scene like that can be a little risky, but he did it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. It's the power of every person to just stand up and speak out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you really inspire me, Mary Chris. Thank you so much for making time to talk to us today, and keep up the good work.
Anytime. And you too, Jen. We love everyone in Vancouver and all the fabulous work. And I miss you.
We all miss you too. Come back soon.
Okay. Thank you, Jen.
Okay. Love to you. Bye-bye.
Love to you too. Bye.
This is Animal Voices Radio, and that was Mary Chris Staples, Toronto activist and member of Toronto Pig Save. And now for our interview with Anita Crines, founder of Toronto Pig Save, regarding the pig trial and the truck crash that occurred last Wednesday.
Today, we're fortunate to have Anita Crines on our show again, and we will be talking about the pig trial and Wednesday's pig truck crash. This has been an eventful few months for you, Anita. On Monday, you had your turn to take the stand in court. We had already heard from the pig farmer and the truck driver who called the police on you for giving water to pigs in his truck. And 2 days after you took the stand to defend your actions, you found yourself at the scene of a crash, which was a truck carrying 180 pigs, and 40 of them died in that crash. Can you tell us how you wound up witnessing that?
So we heard on mainstream media that there was a crash on the morning of Wednesday around 7:30 a.m. right in front of Fearman's Pork Incorporated slaughterhouse in Burlington, where we do vigils. And so people started saying, let's go to the site. And so then I posted, and other people posted, like, let's have as many activists go to the site. And I arrived with my friend Lauren about 10 o'clock. And at that point, there was already a couple of dozen people there taking photos and videos and posting these. And the posts that I saw on my way there were really heart-wrenching. The pigs were being unloaded, the injured pigs. And what was disturbing also was that the staff at Fearman's Pork Incorporated were holding boards so that people could not witness what was happening. And when I arrived, I was quite upset, and it was really disturbing to be on the site. And I crossed the line because all the office workers were actually hiding the scene. And so I crossed the line and just to take some photos. And then I was sort of pushed back, and then I crossed it one more time, and then I was arrested for that. Other people crossed as well, and but I ended up going to the station, and it was really difficult because I wanted to be there. And I was in the police cab for a while, and I did a live stream from it, and I witnessed the workers using paddles to walk the pigs towards across the parking lot to the kill floor. And our intention, even before we arrived, we were posting, let's try to save some pigs. Like, so we were posting hashtags like Fearman's, show mercy, you know, save the pigs. And it was just like, it was so painful to see the pigs walking off the truck and being sent to slaughter. You know, these are survivors. When you go to an accident scene, you expect mercy, you expect compassion, you expect the victims taken to a hospital, and in this case, they should have been treated and then sent to a sanctuary.
Right.
Instance.
You know, what really made me sad when I watched all those videos was seeing some of the pigs lie down in a grassy area and just seemingly really enjoying the sun and fresh air and nudging their noses into the grass. And I thought, this is the first time I think they've ever seen sunlight and had fresh air. And what a beautiful day to be outside and having no idea what awaits them in a few minutes.
Yes, I find the scenes, I first saw the scenes of the pigs walking on the sidewalk you know, right in front of Fearman's, and I thought, wow, they could be walking to freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what should have happened. And then later that day, there were pigs on the grass on the other end of the parking lot away from the truck, and people saw the pig root. And when they had, after they had killed this poor, the poor pig, there was like grass was removed and there was a muddy area. So the pig had, even though the pig was injured, he clearly was still rooting and could have been saved. And I think the media so far has covered the story in terms of, you know, an accident took place, this many pigs got hurt, and there was good images. The media did show these heart-wrenching images. The media coverage has been pretty positive, but a lot of the focus was on the fact that I was arrested because I'm also involved in the pig trial for giving water to thirsty pigs. But there hasn't been enough focus on the tragedy of this injured pig, one of the pigs that you mentioned that was lying on his side in the grass. And people were pleading with the slaughterhouse management for 2 to 3 hours to release that pig, including Steve Jenkins, who's one of the dads of Esther the Wonder Pig. He even brought a trailer with him and he was requesting that pig and another pig who had gone up to this pig on the ground and nuzzled her and showing mercy to her. So Steve was hoping to get both those pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, I mean, they were lying in the pig was lying in the sun for hours with no water. And so the activists said, give them water. And all the slaughterhouse workers management were ignoring them. Mm-hmm. But there was one nice driver who took a bottle from the activists and gave the pig water, and the pig drank the whole bottle.
Aww.
Yeah. And so that. All of this happened. And then the end was very sad and really tragic. And mm-hmm. so after about 3 hours, a tarp was put over the fence so activists couldn't see, and then also around the pig. But the activists took the tarp down on the fence. So they saw a little bit from, you know, the sides. And then they came with a bolt gun and shot the pig in his head, and the pig was convulsing. And this was caught on video by one of the activists, Brian Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So that pig was shot in the head. And the other pig who had gone up to the pig to nuzzle her, was walked to the kill floor. Mm-hmm. So one was shot in the head and one was walked to the kill floor.
How tragic. And it's a really difficult thing for all of you to watch, given what you do for your work.
Yes, people have been traumatized by this. Mm-hmm. I mean, my friend Julie O'Neill, she does photography for Compassionate World. She just did a post on her Facebook, and then we posted it on our Toronto Pig Save Instagram about how she felt. She said she called me. I talked to her this morning. She said she was awake at 4 a.m. and she can't sleep. That's all she's thinking about. Like, what could have I done differently? How might we have saved those two pigs? The slaughterhouse workers were heartless in a way, callous, and including Canadian Food Inspection Agency, the slaughterhouse management. You know, the person who did shoot the pigs was asked, like, don't you feel any remorse? He goes, yeah, yes. But he was still like actively like putting like tarp over the fence and, mm-hmm. you know, and but anyways, it was just like, I think this story needs to be told. Like those pigs that, you know, don't have names, and, you know, activists are thinking of calling the two pigs, Bonnie and Clyde, you know, they showed mercy to each other. They were clearly, you know, they could have been helped and they could have been saved.
I wonder what the slaughterhouse workers are thinking about their jobs in light of this trial. I'm sure there are some who it's just a job that they have to do and maybe they don't even like it. And perhaps even they are on the verge of being transformed into vegans and maybe even animal rights activists. You do talk to some of them at these scenes. You even said that this one fellow said, yes, I am feeling remorse. And obviously he just had a job to do. Do you feel that you're experiencing that emotion in some of the workers?
I think in an event like the horrific truck crash on Wednesday, it could be a transformative time or an opportunity, because normally when these crashes happen, the news media often just would report no injuries, you know, if the truck driver wasn't injured, even though some of the animals are injured and they're all, and the ones that aren't are sent to slaughter. And so that's traditionally how these kind of accidents have been reported. But because we do our weekly vigils there, because we have a, you know, a large movement, and that we came to the site right when the accident happened, we helped change the narrative. So the media didn't cover it that way. They covered it as, you know, 40 pigs were injured, died. You know, a number of them were injured. The rest were walked to the slaughterhouse. So, and they've reported the narrative completely differently than it's been reported historically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of our organizing.
Yeah.
And so the workers, the slaughterhouse workers and the management also were surrounded by caring and compassionate activists who were crying for these pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that also would force them to see the pigs differently. One of the workers last summer told us, you know, the management tells us not to look in their eyes, the pig's eyes. You know, so that makes it easier for people to kill these animals.
Mm.
And so, you know, what happened on Wednesday, you know, where, you know, I think what happened was that the pigs were, you know, were seen as individuals and as social beings, as sentient beings, as, you know, as beings who wanted to live. And I think it must have been hard for slaughterhouse workers to kill those pigs.
Yeah. Well, can we switch gears for a minute and talk about the trial, Anita? What was it like for you on the stand on Monday?
Yes, it's been an incredible week. I think that it went really well. My lawyers had asked me about, you know, sort of what motivates our group. So I was able to speak about our overall mission and talk about the duty to bear witness and really make a strong case for how we all have this duty. And one of the center points of my testimony was talking about who pigs really are. That was like a starting point. You can't appreciate fully, you know, the videos that we show of pigs panting and us giving them water, and, you know, the videos that we showed of the slaughterhouse, unless you know who pigs are. So I did a special video from a visit we recently did at the pig preserve in Tennessee, where 120 pigs roam freely on 100 acres. And I talked about, you know, what they eat, like the berries, the various nuts, the grasses, the leaves off young saplings, and the fact that they roam 5 to 10 acres a day versus, you know, factory farms where they're confined. And we talked about how long they live, like in their late teens, whereas in slaughterhouses they're killed 4 to 6 months old. Talked about how they have mud baths and swim, and how the mud keeps insects off, and how talked about their personality. And then I showed this video that was 13 minutes long from the pig preserve. And it was really moving. And after seeing that, then I showed an image of a pig and a dog on the same kill floor that was taken by Mark Ching, the animal rights activist who goes to Asia to help shut down dog slaughterhouses. And that image, to me, said so much. And I said, like, one should feel the same horror of seeing the pig on the kill floor as the dog, because they were like side by side. And if we don't, it's only because of our, you know, our prejudice here. And then my lawyers were able to show some of the videos that have really been sort of important to our movement. So we showed videos of the panting pigs and us giving water to the pigs. And then we also showed a video of pigs going to the gas chamber from in Australia, and people were crying, and you could hear them crying in the courtroom. And anyway, my testimony sort of ended with the other reasons to go, other reasons that motivate us. So we talked in detail about climate change and animal agriculture's contribution to that problem and other environmental problems and health issues, and then talked about ethics and conscience. And then I was cross-examined, but it was very brief. It was only for 15 minutes, because I think the key part of the cross examination was the Crown attorney trying to suggest that my dog was property, and that if a stranger offered water and I didn't want that, that I had a right to say no. And I said, actually, my dog is an alpha dog, and you know, he's able to make decisions too, and if he's thirsty, he'll drink water. And so then his line of attack sort of fell apart. So that's why the cross-examination ended very quickly.
Oh, you're good. Well, what surprises me about this trial in a very pleasant way is that you're able to talk about things that really have nothing to do with your mischief charge. And I would think that the opposing lawyers, as well as the judge, would say, Anita, let's stay on task here. All we're talking about is you interfering with somebody else's property. How is it that you're able to get away with bringing everything else up, the environmental issue and the cruelty issue? Why the judge isn't stepping in at any point and saying this is irrelevant?
I know, especially, and also adding like the health issue. So we're going to have an expert witness, Dr. Jenkins, who invented the glycemic index, to talk about health. And so I was really happy about that. And I go, wow, this is so great, because as vegans, we actually, you know, make all those arguments, and that motivates us. So the way in which we were able to make it relevant was this basic argument. So when I and other people bear witness to the pigs and the transport trucks, we are present for the pigs. So we're very present. We're there saying, we love you. We're sorry. We give them water when it's hot. But we also have a camera in hand. And the camera in hand is to document with photos and videos what we see in order to change the world. And when we document, we're thinking about all the 70 billion land animals killed a year, you know, the trillion sea creatures killed each year. We're thinking about the environment, how animal agriculture is destroying the environment through catastrophic climate change. We're thinking about how bacon is carcinogenic, according to the World Health Organization. We're thinking about people's conscience. So, you know, when we're trying to change the whole world, we're thinking about all these things. And that, so when we're bearing witness, we have a dual purpose. So that was the key way that we were able to make this relevant.
Right.
So one purpose is being present. The other purpose is to change the world, through, you know, with our camera.
And at no time the judge interrupted and said these things are irrelevant. The judge is just letting you?
No, because the relevance is that is actually the true motivation.
Yeah.
When we do three vigils a week, we don't just do it to be present for the animals that are about to be killed.
Yeah.
Like, we're thinking about how these vigils will change the world for the animals coming after them, mm-hmm. because unfortunately we're not saving the ones before us.
Right.
So that's why we have a camera in hand. That's why we're doing all this organizing. So right. It actually is a true reflection of why we do what we do.
Yeah.
So what's important in terms of relevance is like what are my beliefs? Like,
yeah.
What motivates me? So that's how it's relevant.
I'm really impressed that the judge is allowing you to talk about it, because I definitely think it's relevant. And this is exactly what is getting out to the public now. And it's not about your mischief charge at all. It's about the blame on the consumers. It's not about the slaughterhouse and the way they're treating the animals. It's the people who are funding that in their purchases. And I like that you also mentioned people who give bacon to their kids. That can be compared to giving a cigarette to a kid. Do you want to talk about that?
So, yes. So in my testimony, I talked about one of the motivations for the work we do, and that is to protect people's health. And I started off by saying bacon is considered carcinogenic, according to the World Health Organization, and it causes pancreatic, prostate, colorectal, and other cancers. And the World Health Organization listed bacon and other processed meats like sausages and hot dogs and canned meats as group one carcinogens. And other group one carcinogens are tobacco, asbestos, diesel fuel. So I said, like, giving a child bacon is the same as is akin to giving a child a cigarette. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's highly immoral. It's like you'd consider that child abuse. But in society, people don't see bacon the same way yet. But in reality, it has the same impact.
Yeah.
As tobacco, because they're both group one carcinogens, according to the World Health Organization.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for making time for us today, Anita. And you're so brave and you're speaking so well. Even Mary Chris said in my interview with her earlier, there isn't a better person for the job of what's going on right now. You're so eloquent in getting the message out and so strong. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And I don't feel that way. It's really a team effort. And, you know, Mary Chris was always watching my back when I was, you know, arrested and saying, you know, justice for animals and we love you. And so I just wanted to just express my gratitude for, you know, all the support and how, you know, this community is just so supportive.
Yes. Let's take a minute to thank everybody from the Toronto Pig Save movement and all the activists as well. Of course, you're all involved in this together.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Anita. Best of luck with everything.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for those interviews, Jen. Those were fantastic. You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, October the 14th. It will be an anti-hunting themed show. We will be having an interview with Val Murray. She is the co-founder of the organization called Justice for BC Grizzlies, and she'll be speaking about their current campaign to end the trophy hunt of grizzly bears in BC, and we'll be having a feature interview with Bruce Young. He is the director of the new film called Blood Lions, which is about the canned lion hunting that happens in South Africa, and he'll be speaking about his film. There will also be a screening of this film on October the 30th in Vancouver at the Rio Theater, and we'll be having two pairs of tickets to give away. So please follow us on Facebook next week for your chance to win two free pairs of tickets. So we here at Animal Voices, we want to connect with you online. You can find us at animalvoices.org and listen to the past podcasts of all of our shows there, and stay in touch with us on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. If you have any questions or suggestions or comments for us, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Now, to end the show, we are going to be playing a song by a local musician named Colleen Renison. Can you tell us about the song, Jen, and why you chose it?
Yeah, Colleen is one of my favorite singers, and she's a Vancouver local. This song is called Blue Wing. It's about someone who has had a very tough life, yet remains wishful for a brighter future while serving time in jail. And I thought it was really relevant to today's stories.
Well, stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
He had a blue wing tattooed on his shoulder. Might have been a blue bird, I don't. Well, he gets stone drunk, talks about Alaska. Salmon boats at 45 below. He said he got that blue wing up in Walla Walla. And the cellmate there was little Willie John. Willie, he was once a great blues singer, and Wingin' Willie wrote him up a song. Said it's dark in here, can't see the sky, but I look at this blue wing and I close my eyes and I fly away. Up above the clouds, where the rain don't fall on a poor man's dream. Yeah, on a poor man's dream. Well, they paroled Blue Wing in August of 1963. And he moved north picking apples to the town of Wenatchee. And the winter finally caught him in a run. park on the south side of Seattle, where the days go gray and dark. Well, he drank and he dreamt a vision where the salmon still ran free in his father's cross, that wild old Bering Sea. And the land belonged to everyone. There were old songs yet to sing. Now he's narrowed down to a cheap hotel and a tattooed prison wing. Hey, it's dark in here, can't see the sky, but I look at this blue wing and I close my eyes and I fly away. Above the clouds, where the rain don't fall on a poor man's dream. Yeah, on a poor man's dream. No one knew his Christian name, and there was no one there to cry. But I dreamt there was a funeral, preacher in a cheap pine box. And halfway through the service, Blue Wing began to talk. Said it's dark in here, can't see the sky, but I'm